The Fleischmann G. Sauer, presenting a variety entertainment directed by Rudy Valley.
Company tonight is drawn from almost every major branch of the entertainment world. Here are the people you will meet during the hour just ahead. From the continental European stage, Rachel Kale, prima donna of the Folies Bergère in Paris, during the season just ended. From the American vaudeville big time circuit, Solly Gould, comedian. Young Mr. Gould is an expert practitioner of a time-honored comedy style. In backstage idiom, Solly does Dutch. From the English legitimate stage, a scene from a new play by W. Somerset Maugham. The play opens on Broadway next Wednesday. For the first time, radio listeners will enjoy a pre-hearing of an important stage play before Broadway production. Our cast is headed by the charming star of East is West, Miss Faye Bainter. From light opera, Howard Marsh, star of Blossom Time, The Student Prince, and Showboat, with his own chorus group, the Heidelberg Singers. From Evansville, Indiana, by way of Broadway Footlights, that lovable comedy star of Rain or Shine and Fine and Dandy, Joe Cook. And from all points of the compass, including the Scandinavian, the Connecticut Yankee.
It's not hard to surmise somebody's aces in your good graces. Who understands all your demands? It's quite easy to guess. Someone's made you say yes. Oh, tell me, who do you love? Oh, tell me.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a privilege to introduce now a great Arctic explorer and scientist, Lieutenant Leopold J. Alexis. Lieutenant Alexis began his adventurous career as a cabin boy of Captain Fraprock of the famous Kawa, and has since been a member of a score or more of daring expeditions, including the bird expedition to the South Pole. This evening, he will tell us something of life among the Eskimos, their habits, customs, and little idiosyncrasies. Lieutenant Alexis.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have been asked to speak a few words about the people at the South Pole. But before speaking, I want to say something. These people are different from the people here. What I mean, like the young men there. The young men are called cavaliers. Now, in case you don't know, a cavalier is a young man who eats, sleeps, and drinks, but never works. We got them here, only we call them bums. There are two kinds of Eskimos, male and female. The male are found mostly among the men. Although they have been found among the women. The social and the family life of the Eskimo is very peculiar. At the South Pole, it's a disgrace for an Eskimo to kiss his own wife. Here, it's no disgrace. Just a punishment. And for two gumdrops, mind you, for two little gumdrops, they would murder their own mother-in-law. That makes them different from us by one gumdrop. Now, if there's anything you would like to know about this subject, I would be very pleased to misinform you. So, if you will ask me questions, I will answer to the best of my ignorance. Any questions, please? Any questions?
What kind of furniture do they have?
Why, they don't have no furniture.
Not even chairs?
Nope, not even chairs.
Well, what do they sit on?
Yeah. Next question, please.
Are there any Jewish people down there?
What's that, what?
Are there any Jewish people down there?
No, no, there are no Jewish people there.
Well, who are the icebergs?
Now, please, don't make no fooling, please. Now,
they got dogs down there.
Why, sure they got dogs. They call them huskies. They're very fine watch dogs.
I got a husky.
Yeah, does he bite bums?
I don't know. Come around sometime.
Now, please, ask nice questions, please.
How cold does it get?
Why, it gets so cold that even the Eskimos can't stand it. They actually suffer when they would give anything for something that would warm them up.
Why don't they send for Mae West?
Why, By golly, if you've got a brother, I hate him, too. Any other one here?
The nights
are 6 months long.
What are the Eskimos do all night?
Say, what are you trying to do? Make a fool out of me? I know what's the matter with you. You're drunk.
Yes, you're crazy.
I'm crazy. Well, never mind me being crazy. You're drunk. In the morning, when you wake up, you'll be sober.
You'll be crazy.
Baby, tell me, do you believe in building a loan?
Certainly I do.
Yeah, well, get out of the building and leave me alone. I'm glad, though. I'm glad he brought up the subject of the nights being 6 months and the days. That's a terrible thing. I never forgot. When we got there, they was having the night time, yeah. I went to sleep the 4th of February and got up at 5th of July. I never forgot that. Now, won't somebody ask me one nice question, please, huh?
What's their favorite animal?
The favorite animal is reindeer. Did you ever see a reindeer?
I'll say I have, sweetheart.
Well, stop all that. I don't know what's going on. Here seems to be a lot of noise. People are coming in the studio here. Wait a minute. They look like Eskimos. Maybe they're here to see me. Stop, boys. What is this? What's all the noise going on here? Who are you? Who are you, huh? Who are you?
We represent people of the South Pole.
Well, what do you want?
We are here to deliver
messages
to you from our people.
Isn't that wonderful? They have a message of gratitude for me. Tell me, what do they say? Well, that only shows you how different they really are.
Thank you.
the trees is. Hearken to the grass upon the barn. Listen to the mice in the pantry. Hearken to the breaking of the dawn. Ooh, heavens above, I'm in love. Hearken to the breaking of the dawn. There's a lake in the park. There's a house by the lake. There's a girl in the house in the park by the lake. And the girl in the house by the lake in the park is the girl in the little green hat. And tonight after eight, that's when I've got a date. When the moon's riding high and the stars light the sky, with a girl in the house by the lake in the park, the girl in the little green hat. There's no water in the lake. There's no roof upon the house. No trees in the park at all. But she'll wait beside the lake. I'll be welcome at her house. I'll meet her by the garden wall. There's a ship on the lake. There's a sailor on the shore. There's a girl in his arms. She's the girl I adore. So goodbye to the house by the lake in the park, and the girl in the little green hat.
One of the loveliest of ladies to have crossed the Western Ocean in many a year. The voice of Rachel Carles, prima donna of the Folies Bergères in Paris. Mademoiselle Carles is in New York for a visit. This is her first American radio appearance. Her song, Parlez-moi d'amour, speak to me of love.
Vous savez bien que dans le fond je n'en crois rien. Et cependant, je veux encore écouter ce mot que j'adore. Votre voix au son caressant, qui le murmure en frémissant, me berce de sa belle histoire. Et malgré moi, je veux y croire. Dites-moi des choses tendres. Votre beau discours, mon cœur n'est pas là de l'entendre. Pourvu que toujours vous répétiez ces mots si brèves. Of love, and say that I'm longing to hear tender words of love. Receive them again, I implore you. Because toujours vous répétiez ces mots si frais.
Since she has been in this country, a matter of days, Mademoiselle Carles has been attending Broadway theaters and learning Broadway songs. At rehearsal today, she sang for us a typical American song in what she firmly declares is the typical American style. I have asked her to sing it for you. Okay, mademoiselle?
Okay, monsieur. I'm just putting in the hands of a boy like you. You're the smoothest so-and-so, not only that, you're mighty cute. Your legs are proud and the toes are fat of my last year's blue suit. I'm the softest so-and-so, not any boy ever knew. Oh, I may be deaf as it ever come, but at least I'm on to you. You're an old booty, I'm an old softy. I'm just like putting in the hands of a boy like you. You're an old me, I'm a big goose. I just got nothing in the hands of a boy like you. Me, you play me for a set. Oh, you go to let and dress. Well, dear, I think it's time, you know. You've done just what I want to do. Silly old smooth, crafty old soft. I just like putting in the hands of a boy like you. You're an old smooth, I'm an old and old and old smooth. I'm just like putting in the hands of a boy like you. You're an old me. I'm a big, big, big fool. I just go nothing in the hands of a boy like you. Poor me, you played me for a set. Poor you, you sold a new that hat. Well, dear, I think it's time you know. You don't know what they want you to do. Juba. He was homely, he was dumb, and so was Juba. Just a big ambitious bum, he wouldn't do her. So much as chew a piece of gum, so this is news to me. I understand her. He's an overnight success, he's in demand her. Why, I never could have guessed. Well, he found a big mate with any bum, the greater Cuba and the rest is history. Down in Havana, there's a funny looking booba. He plays a rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. Oh, when he's apple, fell an apple, but the chap would rather grapple with his oompa, oompa, oompa. They prefer it to the booba, doopa, doopa. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. It doesn't take him very long to get a tumble, but all the rumba lovers go into the rumble. Oh, how I'd like to be his double fall without a bit of trouble. With his oompa, 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 he can knock 11 ladies for a looper. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. He's not a green horn. He blows a mean horn. A must-be-seen horn. Oh, he's a whiz. All Havana loves his funny-looking booba, who plays the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. I can't believe it, but they tell us every fiend has been jealous of his oompa, oompa, oompa. They prefer it to the booba, dooba, dooba. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. They love his oompa, 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 oompa. Down in Havana, there's a funny-looking booba. He plays the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. He's got a corking constitution for he stopped the revolution with his oompa, oompa, oompa. Oh, it's better than the booba, dooba, dooba. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. The other night was in his sort of coma. He crashed a party in a strictly private homer, where every saint and every sinner who was sitting down to dinner heard that oompa roompa roompa. Why they all had out a wild and woolly whooper. They love the roompa on the tuba down in Cuba. Oh, he's a green horn. He blows a mean horn. A must-be-seen horn. Oh, he's a whiz. Oh, he's a bigger man as Mr. Mussolini. And now they're calling him the tuba Toscanini. He's getting wealthy, strong, and hearty, thanks to plenty good Bacardi and the doompa, rumpa, rumpa. Oh, he knocked a boopa doopa for a looper. They love the rumba on the tuba down in Cuba. They love his oompa, 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 oompa. Whoop, whoop.
A bit late in doing it, we finally give expression to the most popular song of the day. Have you ever been lonely? In his fight again. When I heard Jack Denny play this lovely melody several weeks ago, I knew it was Berlin speaking. It's been a long while since he has really written a typical waltz as lovely as I Can't Remember. Was it cloudy or beautiful? I can't remember. The first words I spoke, did I say you were beautiful? Was it Sunday? Was it Monday? Were you dressed in gray or in blue? I can't. All I remember is you.
You are listening to the Fleischmann Geese Hour, directed by Rudy Vallee, who introduces Solly Gould, Rochelle Collis, Howard Marsh and Company, Joe Cook, and, as the next act, a scene from W. Somerset Maugham's new play, for services rendered, starring Miss Faye Bainter. A new mom play is always an event of major importance in the theater. Our brief preview of Mr. Mom's latest work is the first occasion of the sort in radio history. For permission to use the script and members of the stage cast, we are indebted to Mr. Sam Harris, the producer, who brings the play to New York for its first performance next Wednesday at the Booth Theater. We hear it now, an episode from For Services Rendered, featuring Miss Faye Bainter with Henry Daniel and Richie Ling.
For Services Rendered is a drama of the war's aftermath. The story of ruined lives, dragged out through the years in the spiritual material wreckage of post-war days. The characters are members and friends of an upper-class English country family, the Ardsleys. In one way or another, all of them are war victims. It is with Eva Ardsley, eldest daughter of the house, that our scene is concerned. For 15 years, she has devoted her life to the service of her brother, blinded in the war. She has sacrificed everything. Youth, love, marriage. Every chance for a normal life of her own. She is in love with Collie Stratton, an ex-naval officer and war hero who is now making a complete failure of life as an automobile dealer. He faces bankruptcy and possible jail sentence for giving a fraudulent check. As our scene begins, the two are together. Made miserable by his lack of interest, she adopts desperate measures.
I beg your pardon. I was looking for my bag. I didn't know there was anyone here.
I was just going.
Please don't. I won't disturb you.
What are you talking about? Surely you can come into your own dining room.
I wasn't telling you the truth. I knew you were here, and my bag's upstairs. I heard Father go. I wanted to see you. I'm most frightfully anxious.
What about?
Well, everyone knows you're in difficulty. Father let drop a hint at luncheon. I knew he was going to see you this afternoon.
It's kind of you to bother, Evie. I've had rather a tough passage. But at all events, I know where I am now.
Can nothing be done?
Not very much, I'm afraid.
Won't you let me help you?
My dear, how can you?
Well, it's only a matter of money, isn't it?
Only is good.
Collie, I have £1,000 my godmother left me. It's invested, and I've always dressed myself on the interest. I could let you have that.
I couldn't possibly take money from you. It's out of the question.
Why not, if I want to give it to you?
It's awfully generous.
Surely you must know how fond I am of
you. It's very nice of you, Evie. Besides, your father would never hear of it.
Well, it's my money. I'm not a child.
Can't be done, my dear.
Couldn't I buy an interest in your garage? I mean, well, then it would be sort of an investment.
Can you see your father's face when you suggested it? It looked all right when I bought it. Things were booming then. But the slump killed it. It isn't worth a bob.
But if you could get more capital, you could afford to wait until times got better.
Your father doesn't think very much of me as it is. He'd think me a pretty mean skunk if he thought I'd induce you to put your money into an insolvent business.
You keep speaking of father. It's nothing to do with him. It's you and I that are concerned.
I know you're a very good sort. And you're always going out of your way to do things for people. But there are limits. Perhaps you want to get married one of these days, and then you will find your £1,000 come in devilish useful.
I could never have a better use for it than to give it to someone who means as much to me as you do.
I'm awfully sorry. God knows I want the money, but I really can't take it from anyone like you.
I thought you liked me.
I like you very much. You're a jolly good friend.
I thought perhaps someday we might be more than friends. After all, if we were engaged, it would be very natural for me to come to your rescue when you were in a hole.
But we're not engaged.
Well, couldn't we pretend to be? Just for a little while, I mean. And then I could lend you the money, and Father could help you to get safe.
Oh, my dear, that's absurd.
When you got used to the idea, you wouldn't want to break it off.
My dear, whatever put such an idea in your head?
You're alone. I'm alone. No one in the world cares tuppence for either of us.
What nonsense. Your family is devoted to you. They depend on you so enormously. Why, the whole house centers round you.
Oh, but I want to get away. I'm so unhappy here.
Well, I can't believe that. You're just nervous and run down. I dare say you want a bit of change.
you just won't understand. How can you be so cruel?
I'm not cruel. I'm awfully grateful to you.
I can't say any more than I have. So humiliating.
I'm dreadfully sorry. I don't want to hurt your feelings.
After all, I'm not as old as all that. Plenty of men have wanted to marry me.
I don't doubt that for a minute. I'm quite convinced that one of these days you'll find someone that you really like.
Oh.
And I'm sure you'll make him a perfectly grand one.
Oh.
I'm awfully sorry.
Go away, Charlie. Please go away.
A few days later, Eva's alone in the drawing room of the Ardsley home, her nerves worn to the breaking point by her inward struggle. Her father enters. He is a cold, pompous lawyer. Alone of those in the house, he has been insensible to the air of impending tragedy that shadows all his family.
Eva, something dreadful's happened. I thought I'd better come in and tell you at once.
Collie!
How did you know?
What is it?
They just telephoned to me from the police station. There's been an accident. Collie's been shot. I'm afraid he shot himself.
He's not. Dead.
Yes.
Ah! You killed him, you fiend!
What are you talking
fiend,
about?
You fiend! You beast! Leave me alone. You could have seized him, you devil. I hate you.
Are you mad, Eva?
You wounded him to his death. You didn't give him a chance.
Good heavens, we all gave him chance.
It's
after
a lie.
Chance.
He begged for money. He begged for time. Not one of you would listen to him. Not one of you remembered that he risked his life for you 100 times. You brute.
Oh, what
rubbish. I hope you're shamed before the whole world. Let everyone know that a brave and gallant gentleman went to his death. Because nobody in this bloody place would lend him £200.
Pretty language, Eva. In point of fact, £200 wouldn't have helped him. It would have saved him from going to jail, but that's all.
Jail?
Yes. A warrant for his arrest was issued this morning.
Oh, poor Carl. I can't. It's cruel. It's cruel.
Now, my dear, don't take it so much to heart. Go and lie down in your room, and Ethel will come and rub your forehead with eau de cologne. The whole thing is very unfortunate. No one regrets it more than I do. The poor fellow was in a hopeless mess. And perhaps he took the best way out of a situation that could only have thrown discredit on the uniform he wore.
But he was alive. And he's dead. He's gone from us forever. He's been robbed of all the years that were ahead of him. Have you no pity for him? He used to come here nearly every day.
He was a very nice fellow and a gentleman. Unfortunately, he wasn't a very good businessman.
As if I cared whether he was a good businessman.
There's no reason why you should, but his creditors did.
He was everything in the world to me.
My dear, what an exaggerated way to speak. You ought to have more sense at your age.
He loved me and I loved him.
Don't talk such nonsense.
We were engaged to be married.
What's that? Since when?
Engaged.
Well, my dear, you're well out of that. He was in no position to marry.
It was my only chance.
You have a good home. You'd much better stay here.
And make myself useful.
There's no harm in that.
I've got just as much right to life and happiness as anybody else.
Of course you
You've
have.
You've done your best to prevent me from marrying.
Rubbish.
Why should I be sacrificed all the time? Why should I be at everybody's beck and call? Why should I have to do everything? I'm sick of being put upon. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of Les. I'm sick of Sydney. I'm sick of you all.
Eva!
Don't touch me! Don't touch me!
Some of you seem to like What Do You Know of Love? Because you did, we play it again for you now.
to be wild, what do you know of love? Your eyes are so young and so very blind. Someday you will find someone just your kind. We shouldn't have met, we never should have kissed. Just try to forget, say that I don't exist. Heartache come and heartache go, but as you grow, maybe you'll know something of love.
Howard Marsh is an unusual chapter in the story of American light opera. Three shows have made for him an entire career and a great fortune. Blossom Time, The Student Prince, and Showboat. The three biggest musical hits of the past decade. With a group of singers he has assembled and trained for radio, Mr. Marsh offers a medley of numbers from Sigmund Romberg's great operetta, The Student Prince. We present the Heidelberg Singers and Howard Marsh.
Give me
quite as blossomed on the bough. Darling, he married about the song of a bird, filling all the air with meaning. On my heart, what she did sing, only you can bury the bough.
Off to Buffalo. To Niagara in a sleeper, there's my honeymoon that's cheaper and the train goes slow. Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo. Someday the stork may pay a visit and leave a little souvenir. Just a little soup, what is it? But we'll discuss that later, dear. For a little silver quarter, we can have the Pullman porter turn the lights down low. Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo.
If you haven't seen 42nd Street, the Warner Brothers picture, don't miss it. It really is one of the finest film musicals in years. Outstanding among the four songs in it is Shuffle Off to Buffalo. Our little songbird, Alice Faye, tells it musically.
Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo. To Niagara in a sleeper, there's my honeymoon sleeper and the train goes slow. Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo. Someday the stork may pay a visit and leave a little souvenir. Just a little tube, what is it? But we'll discuss that later, dear. For a little silver quarter, we can have the Pullman porter turn the lights down low. Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo.
Once again, we hearken back to the glorious days of 1929 when the Yankees and I journeyed to California. A new tune we carried with us was Lonely Troubadour.
And let my melody draw proclaim for me that you're the one that I adore. And if you answer no, then on my way I'll go to be forevermore a lonely troubadour.
Introducing Mr. Joe Cook, star of Rain of Shine and Fine and Dandy, who returns to Broadway soon with another helping of his own particular brand of magnificent insanity. A new show called Hunky Dory. At my request, Joe is doing two of his famous nonsense stories, two that I heard for the first time in the Vanity some years ago and always have wanted to hear again. I'm sure you'll enjoy them too. And so, meet Mr. Cook.
Didn't it rain? Ladies and gentlemen, regardless of what Rudy just said to you, I believe there's been entirely too much levity on the radio here of late, and I thought it would be a good idea to read you a serious little story from a book I have here, and I hope this will be a lesson to you. I know it'll do you a world of good. It's on page 22. It starts off, says, "Tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet," said Yellowbird. "Who took my little nest? Oh, here comes Black Sheep. Black Sheep, did you take away my nest?" Evidently, somebody's taken away the little bird's nest. This is a mystery story, you see. "I put it in the little tree, then I flew to the brook." "Oh, no," said Black Sheep, "not I." See, he says he didn't take the nest. But that's what he says. We don't know whether he did or not. "I would never do such a thing." See, again, he says, he reiterates the statement he just made heretofore. "It was the prettiest nest I ever saw." "Oh, no, I did not take it away." That's his story, and he's going to stick to it. Now, "Moo, moo," said White Cow. "Bow wow," said Brown Dog. And "ba, ba," said the Black Sheep. Those are the imitations of the animals I'm giving you now. There's no rhinoceros in this story. I can't imitate a rhinoceros so very good. "Who took Yellow Bird's nest?" Now, that's what we want to know. Who really did take the nest? Of course, I could turn the page and look, but I wouldn't spoil the story. We think a little boy took it. Is that so? Now they think a little boy took it. "We wish we could find him." A little boy heard them. He hung his head. Then he ran into the house and hid behind the bed. Uh-oh, that looks bad for the little fella now. "He would not eat his dinner. Can you guess why? I bet you any amount of money that little son of a gun stole the nest." Now, just before, what do you say? Just see what he did. "The little boy felt very sorry. Soon he came out of the house again. He took the nest back to the little tree. Dear Yellow Bird," he said, "I am sorry. I took your nest from the little tree. Didn't I tell you he took the nest? But I will never do such a thing again." Well, that's nice. "Tweet, tweet, 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 tweet," sang Yellow Bird. "I am as happy as can be." And that's the finish of the story. Now, you see, everything has turned out all right. The little bird has his nest back again. And the little boy is sorry that he stole the little bird's nest. Now, I certainly hope that that will make better men and women of us. You know, I was just thinking how remarkable, how everything changes continuously around New York, not only the buildings, but the faces. In fact, as I look around this evening, I see very few of the real old timers. I mean men and women who were in New York when I first settled here years ago. Who remembers when on this very site formerly stood the old polo ground? Just as I thought, I'm the only one who knew that. And I don't mean the old polo grounds. I mean the old polo grounds. Well, sir, some 72-odd years ago, this coming Wednesday, we played the deciding game of the season. There were only three cities in the league at that time: New York, Brooklyn, and San Francisco. Of course, we used Frisco to break a jump between New York and Brooklyn. And 1 million people were at the game that day. I wouldn't be exaggerating if I said there were less than 1 million. But to give you an idea, the size of the grounds, the home plate was right about where that lady is sitting, and the center field bleachers, if I'm not mistaken — I probably am mistaken, but if I'm not mistaken — were out around Evansville, Indiana. Well, sir, my manager says to me, "Mr. Spaulding," — I went on the name of Spaulding in those days — he says, "you're next at bat." It was in the ninth inning. The score was tied 5-3 favor of us. "We need 6 runs to win. I am playing second base and right field. I am too good for one position. We have 4 men on base, 2 men on second, the little short fella, the umpire couldn't see him. And Babe Ruth's grandfather was pitching. I'm at bat. I turned to our bat boy, little Johnny McGraw, and I says, John, he says, what is it, Mr. Delahanty? I went on the name of Delahanty for some time. I says, bring me my bat. So John and 3 other fellows carried my bat over for me. I used a telegraph pole for a bat in those days. I was very tall at one time, but I've been out in the rain. Well, sir, I crouched down in that well-known pose of mine, as was my wont. I crouched down, the ball comes sailing over the pan, I ran into the old apple, she goes right out over the center field fence, and at that, I topped the ball. Well, sir, I start for first base, the crowds are hollering, hooray for Weber. They knew me under the name of Weber. The crowds are cheering, the band playing, king and queen throwing kisses to me, the railroad began running excursions into the park. And the crowd started to throw money at me. I picked up over $9,000 on my way to first base alone. And put it in an old icebox I always carried on my back when I ran base. And I start for second base, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. This was a doubleheader we were playing that day. And just as I am sliding in home, the umpire, Daniel Boone was umpiring. He hollers out foul ball. Well, sir, you wouldn't give a cent for me at that moment. I rush up to him. I threw off my overcoat. We always played in overcoat. There I stood in my bathing suit. I got off my bicycle and I says, did you call that a foul? He says, certainly. I says, how could it be foul when I hit the ball to center field? He says, yes, but you hit it over the center fielder's head. Of course, he had me there. I couldn't answer that. But you know, it so discouraged me with baseball, I tore down the old park one night, moved it further uptown, and I built the largest soft drink garden in the world. 5,000 feet in length, and only one soft drink dispenser. He worked on horseback. And it looks like tomorrow, April 7th, I'll have to buy him a motorcycle. But in the front yard of my place, there was a great big apple tree, and one day I came outside in my white apron and jacket, and there was my younger son, who was much older than I was at the time, chopping down this apple tree just to get at one pineapple that hung near the top of the tree. He was very fond of watermelon. Well, I looked at the boy, and I hit him over the head with a great big log of wood I was carrying around my vest pocket to hit little children with, and I says, don't you ever let me catch you chopping down anything that bears fruit. And I explained to him about the time when little Georgie Washington chopped down the cherry tree. His father didn't like it, and he was as angry as could be. So he took hold of Georgie. Of course, he was Georgie's pop, and says, now listen, Georgie, if you really have to chop, never chop a cherry tree, because cherry trees bear fruit. Same applies to apple trees. One chop might kill the root. And never strike a woman. They're the mothers of all men. And never step on flowers, or they'll never bloom again. Without the gifts of nature, people couldn't thrive. Therefore, you must protect the things that help keep you alive. So never chop a cherry tree and kill its precious root. And never push a push cart, because a push cart, too, bears fruit.
Bison G Star brings you another star crowded broadcast next Thursday evening. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.